Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell stories that the traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by three folks from the Akchin Indian community and Harrah's Akchin. Welcome to Chairman Robert Miguel. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Adrian.
And Robert Livingston, General Manager of Harrah's Akchin.
Thank you.
And Mike Kintner, Director of Marketing and Operations at Harrah's Akchin. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Adrian.
You guys are celebrating the 25th anniversary of this casino project, and I'd love to understand in this conversation the backstory, what got you here today. Chairman Robert Miguel, why don't you start off by introducing us to the Akchin Indian community for folks who are not familiar with the history and present day situation there in Maricopa?
Okay, thank you. The Akchin Indian community was established back in 1912, but in 1961, we were able to move forward with the Articles of Association, which governs or, again, accommodates and rules the Akchin community as far as their process and their way of life and whatnot. Akchin is a 22,000-acre tribe. About 14,000 is designated to agriculture. So we've always been a farming community. And, you know, as we've progressed throughout the decades, when gaming was allowed for tribes in Arizona, we were able to move forward in that direction. But again, we always want to recognize ourselves as a farming tribe. We are considered one of the biggest farming tribes in the Southwest states, and so we're proud of that. We had some great leaders and great farm employees, managers, and whatnot that have established and created our success. So we're really proud of that.
Now, you grew up there in the community.
Yes, I did.
Talk a little bit about your experience growing up. I understand as a young man, you worked for the newspaper. You must have a special affinity for some of the interesting stories that have unfolded there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Adrian, I talked about farming, and farming is where I began my employment as a teen. My uncle, Richard, was a foreman at that time. And of course, back then, the tribe needed some employees, and they reached out to us as youngsters. And so we spent a lot of time out in the fields, basically 10-hour days, just doing a number of things to help, again, move the farm in a successful way. We did the little jobs and whatnot. So farming was something that we started. And then as the decades had gone by for me, I had a number of other employment opportunities from our recreation department, our maintenance department, just overall different variety of departments I went through. But prior to getting on the council, I was a photojournalist for a newspaper for 17 years. So if you think about it and you go by the numbers, I think I've got over 30 years of employment with the Akchin Indian community and currently in my position as chairman of the tribe.
Transitioning from being behind the on the farm for sure, but then behind the lens, mm-hmm. documenting and telling stories to now leading the community itself must have been an interesting transition. Mm-hmm. And I understand that this form of political organization has not been around forever. You're the first directly elected chairman. Can you talk a little bit about how that works and how tribal governance and sovereignty plays out in Akchin?
Well, yeah, definitely. And back to 1961, when our Articles of Association was created, and that was what governed our community. When it came to the election process, we're governed by or run by a five-person council. So when every year there's an election, and the tribe elects their leaders, and the council at that time selected amongst themselves their chair and their vice chairman. And so that was going on for a while until a couple of years ago. 2 years ago, the tribe moved in creating their own constitution. So that's what we're governed by today. And in our new constitution, it allowed the people to vote for their chairman and their vice chairman. And for me, fortunately, I was elected chairman. So I'm the first to be elected underneath the constitution, which I'm really, really proud of. But as an employee of the newspaper and just seeing our growth and how we have grown successfully, I would say it's been an awesome thing to see. I'll tell you, it's from the auction community and the city of Maricopa growing together from way back in the 60s. It kind of reminded you if you've seen the Andy Griffith Show. I mean, we were really, really small. Everybody knew each other. Everybody supported each other. We took care of each other, and we've grown together. But, you know, that's one of the things and one of the traits that we do have as community members of auction is, you know, we love to support and give back in any way we can, even if we don't have, let's just say financially, we don't have the means financially back then. We did what we could to help each other. And it was just one great, great community supporting one another and just doing the little things to make ourselves happy. And that's who we are as people of auction.
Now, I want to explore a little bit before we bring the gaming aspect into focus. You mentioned the close relationship, both geographically, but also in terms of just the interconnection between the city of Maricopa and the Akchin Indian community. Mm-hmm. Both of them co-located, if you will, in a nearby area of a very large metropolitan city. So on the one hand, you may be considered kind of a neighboring city and outlying area, but on the other hand, you have your own unique identity. In the studio here, we had the former economic development director from City of Maricopa, Denise Earhart, was here talking about some of the unique aspects of Maricopa itself, neighboring Phoenix, but very different environment, very different demographics, and in some level, a different story about the self-identity. What's your point of view on the present and future of this part of our region?
I think we've always had the thought and the idea of, you know, someday we would see this grow. We just didn't think it was going to grow that fast, which was a good thing. It could be, again, you have some positives and negatives about growth. And in our area there, it was just a gem waiting to be found, and it happened. But, you know, one of the great things about our relationship is that we're both almost identical. Again, just going back, we were small. We shared each other's tradition, cultures, in a sense, and just our way of thoughts of how we wanted the area to grow. And, you know, so it was always good to collaborate and to be on the same page with one another. And, you know, again, we have a gem out there. We have a destiny, a destination out there. We identify just some of the needs that our area has there that are going to accommodate the citizens of Maricopa and Auction. And it's continued growth. It's always going to grow. But, you know, that's one of the things I love to point out is the fact that we are able to sit down and have that relationship, that we respect one another just as we did way back when. So, you know, like I said, it's a destination. It's a positive. Everything's going great out there. It's just a matter of staying on the same page and continue to collaborate with one another. And, you know, we understand that it's going to continue to grow. And so right now, together, we're laying down the foundation of future growth. You know, so it's a positive thing. You know, overall, we're again on the same page. I sit on the Maricopa Economic Development Alliance committee, and as a representative of Auction with Maricopa, so I'm able to get information or understand, you know, the progression. And you know, we're talking and making sure we're not duplicating one another. So we're bringing together different entities or different priorities to the area to accommodate the overall growth.
The 20th century was a very interesting century for Native communities in this country, dealing with the history of disenfranchisement, trying to find their way towards more autonomous expressions of self-governance and sovereignty, fighting for access to resources, water in other areas of the country, other natural resources. And then gaming has come into that picture and become a significant part of the economic development of not just Akchin, but of many other tribal communities throughout North America, in both the United States and in Canada. Do you remember when this first started to become an issue? Were you aware at the time in the late 80s, early 90s, that this was going to become a thing? How did it evolve in your own understanding?
As far as gaming?
Yes.
For me, I didn't realize gaming was going to be a priority or play a role in economic development for tribes until the situation incident happened. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but the Fort McDowell Indian community was doing gaming, whether it was illegal or not at that time. Again, they moved forward with that, but the feds and everything, but he came and they took away the machines and there was a standoff and whatnot. So that's when I think gaming really kind of became exposed, that it could be a possibility and a priority for tribes to brighten their lives in a sense economically to provide for their people. But once that happened, I think it just took off. And for the tribes, it was a positive because, again, it did allow us to provide services. And we wanted to make it right with the state. We wanted to make sure that, okay, if this was going to be a possibility or for the tribes, let's get to the table and see what we could do. And fortunately for tribes, it ended up working out to where compacts were able to be negotiated.
The Akchin community negotiated one of those original compacts with the state in the early 90s, a period of, I understand from the background I was given, 92 to 94, mm-hmm. and that culminating a decade of legal challenges and back and forth. When did the community realize that partnering with an established management company like Harrah's was going to become such an important move? It's unique in that regard. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I'm smiling because not because I've got two from Harrah's with me here, but I think it was the smartest and greatest move we could ever do back when we were going into gaming, we're negotiating our compacts from our former leaders at that time. We were in an area outside the metro area where the bigger tribes were. So we figured we were going to have to maybe fight a little bit more to get the customer, to get that dollar and whatnot. And the leaders at that time decided, you know, for us to benefit and for us to possibly progress and become, you know, a great, great facility, Harrah's was a brand name that they at that time thought that would be something that would be a great relationship to provide, you know, to bring the light, so to speak, to our area. And I think at that time, you know, it was a great idea, and it still is. I mean, but we didn't think it was going to be as big as what it is today. I mean, so it was great.
And to this day, Akchin is the only tribal community with an international management company in Arizona running their gaming operation, the casino, the hotel, and all the things. And we're going to hear about those details. Yeah. Really speaks to the foresight of the previous leadership in putting that arrangement in place. I understand the casino broke ground on May 26, 1994. So the 25th anniversary we're talking about is a couple of days from the day of this show on May 26, 2019. So this is a momentous year, 25 years culminating in where we are and the recent expansion that's taken place. Robert Livingston, you've been the general manager of Harrah's Akchin for how long now?
Since 2011.
But you've been with the parent company, Caesars Entertainment, for?
Since 1991.
So decade, 30 years-ish.
Getting there.
Right?
Yeah.
We round up or down, depending.
you can call it 30.
Okay, great. Talk a little bit about, since the time you joined here in Arizona, how you've seen the evolution and what led to the expansion that's just undergone.
Well, I'll take you back a little bit in history since I was around in 1991. It was very interesting. You know, the company was Promise Companies at the time. And we had Hampton Inns, Embassy Suites, Homewood Suites, and we had five Harrah's casinos, four in Nevada, one in Atlantic City. And it was the early 90s, and gaming was expanding up and down the Mississippi River, primarily with riverboat gaming. And then there was this thing called Indian gaming that no one really knew much about, right? And our chairman at the time, Phil Satry, he had a vision of expanding the network, expanding the Harrah's network. And it wasn't Caesars at the time, but the Harrah's network, and having as many properties as we could geographically dispersed across the country, and then leveraging our player loyalty program. So that was the vision way back in the early 90s. Now, back when we first engaged with Akchin, the loyalty program was not as powerful as it is today. I mean, now we've got 40-plus properties across the United States. We've got, you know, with the expansion of riverboat gaming, we're up and down the Mississippi River. It's hard to go more than a few hours without running into a Harrah's or a Horseshoe or a Caesars. And we expanded through acquisition. We expanded through riverboat gaming. And so we've created this network of properties. And then you layer on top of it our loyalty program, which you know, has created this powerful engine for not only the properties that we own or manage, but also for the company. It's really the engine that makes our company work. And back in 1994, that was not even a thought. And that was certainly not a reason that Ok Chien got involved with us.
For folks in the know, maybe they don't need this background. They're already aware of it. But explain a little bit about how the loyalty program has, how it works and how it's been so beneficial to the properties.
Probably the easiest way to describe it is, you know, everybody's familiar with the loyalty program that the airlines have, whether it's American Airlines or Southwest. And, you know, the more you fly with that airline, the benefits grow and grow and grow. For us, it works the same way. The more you either gamble or spend, over the years, we've layered in not only, you know, rewards based on gambling or your gambling dollar, but we've layered in if you buy merchandise in our retail shop, or if you go to a restaurant, if you spend cash in our hotel, you also earn reward credits that just continue to accumulate. So part of the game is just earning reward credits, and then you have the ability to spend those either at your home property, and this is where the network comes into play. If you're at your home property as Harris Ok Chien and you want to go see Celine Dion in Las Vegas, well, that's Caesars Entertainment there, Caesars Palace, and you can use your reward credits that you earned at Harris Ok Chien and go spend those in Las Vegas and see Celine Dion, right? Or you could travel to New Orleans and around Mardi Gras time and enjoy Mardi Gras and hang out at the Harris New Orleans property. So there's experiences all across the country that you can avail yourself to because of the program. And then the other piece of the program is kind of a leveling. So the more you play, the higher tier score you get. So in our company, or our program, 7 stars at the top tier. And it's interesting where 7 star came from. Bill Hara had 7 wives. Had won twice, but that's where the 7 stars come from. And then the diamond program. So our 2 top tiers are diamond and 7 star. And so the portability of that tier. So if you're a diamond or a 7 star at Harris Ok Chien and you want to travel to Caesars in Atlantic City, you're recognized immediately at that level. The benefits that you earned at that level, you will automatically get at those properties. That's a pretty powerful thing for a program, and not very many of our competitors have that ability, nor do they have the number of properties across the United States.
Sounds like there's really an entire network of unique experiences, destinations, opportunities for entertainment, family vacations, retired, you know, hit the road and work the circuit, a whole network of...
Yeah, absolutely. Right here in Phoenix... you know, the community, Ok Chien community, is a local presenting sponsor of the Waste Management Open. So there's certain assets that we're able to avail ourselves to, the famous 16th hole. So last year we invited 8 groups from across the country to come enjoy that. And they came out to the property. They spent some time at Harris Ok Chien doing what they do to continue to earn loyalty points or reward credits. And they had a great time with a very unique experience that we're able to provide them because of their, you know, their connectivity to the network.
I suspect, having something of a sense of how the general public thinks about things, both as a social scientist and as a media personality and somebody who likes to get out and about and talk with folks, that most people don't realize that when they see a casino on a reservation or when they see some of these things playing out, that they are looking at an engine of economic development for the entire region. I suspect they think of it from the perspective of entertainment, which is, of course, primarily how they interact with it. But when you look at employment, when you look at the way in which this generates revenue for historically underdeveloped and sometimes intentionally underdeveloped parts of this country, there's another layer that they can see. How much of that is on your mind personally? And it might be none, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what sense do you have as a professional working an established career that you're part of something that has that kind of interesting, not always understood historical dimension?
Yeah, I think there's several layers to that. I could unpack that in a whole bunch of different ways.
Sure.
But one of the things that, you know, we're right there located on the Ok Chien Indian Reservation. So we get to see the economic benefit of the prosperity of the casino every day in our face. We see the beautiful fire station that the community built. We go down to the Elder Center and we see those programs that they put on for their elder community. So all of those things are available because of the casino and also the success of the farms. They have a very successful farming operation, but it is kind of unique in our world of managing a Native American property to see the fruits of our labor, so to speak, you know, all around us. You know, the buildings that go up and, you know, that right next door to Harrah's, the community invested in UltraStar. It's a multi-tainment facility. They purchased a golf course, which is 4 miles from the property, Southern Dunes. So all of those things are just, you know, part of the economic development of the community.
Chairman Robert McGill, you want to add to that?
Again, we you know, through our gaming venture, we've been able to, as Mr. Livingston has stated, provide and even go above and beyond just our community. The Southern Dunes Golf Course, we were able to purchase that from the city of Maricopa and put that land into trust, so now it's a part of the community. And we've put millions of dollars into the facility, and now it's the number 5 ranked golf course in the state of Arizona to play, and just a number of other things. But just going outside the community, we've been able to, of course, be the local presenting sponsor of the Waste Management Open. We've been able to support the Super Bowl when it came here last time, and it's coming here again in the next couple of years. So we'll have the first round of refusal on if we want to move forward on that too. But a lot of opportunities, and overall, Adrian, is we of course want to take care of our community first priority. But we also, again, we venture out and see how we could help the state of Arizona overall and let the nation know that when it comes to not just events but certain things, that we can be the focal point too here of the United States, that we can provide an opportunity, we could provide something exciting here in Arizona, that we can be players. You know, the NCAA Final Four basketball tournament came here a few years ago. That was the first time it ever come to the Southwest in like almost 20 to 30 years, and we were able to play a role in that. So again, you know, when overall, when we see at certain events the Aktien Tribal Seal up there, in reality, it's everybody's seal, tribal seal here from the state of Arizona, be it the tribes, be it the state. We are committed to helping the state become a focal point of entertainment, of services and whatnot. So that's our vision and what we support.
I mean, that's really something to be proud of. It's a significant accomplishment. And 25 years of any successful operation of this magnitude is something to be proud of. Robert Livingston, can you talk a little bit about how things have evolved over that history? Get us to the point now where we have this major multi-million dollar renovation and expansion. What were some of the early phases and how did it get? Can you walk us up to the present?
I'll give you the history as I know it. You know, back in 1994, gaming was quite a bit different in Arizona. It was limited to, I think it was bingo, poker, and a limited number of slot machines per tribe. And at the time, I think Aktien probably had about 200 and something licenses. So the building that we're in, if you could kind of like close your eyes and imagine, you know, there was probably 40 or 50 poker tables, not blackjack tables, but poker tables. There was a bingo hall, and then there was 200 or so slots. I think we had a little food court or maybe a little fast food restaurant. I think we had the buffet. There was no hotel. And so over the years, gaming evolved in Arizona. At some point, blackjack card games were allowed. There was also the ability to expand the number of slot machines that you could have on your floor by partnering with tribes that are not located in, you know, near population. So they could actually lease their slot machines to other tribes. So we were able to expand the number of units that we had on the floor. So And slots evolved over those same times. I mean, back in the day, you know, a slot machine was just a 3-reel stepper game, is what we used to call them. And now they're this, you know, I think a game back in those days, you could buy a game for about $4,000. A game today is $20,000+. It's a computer. It's just an amazing piece of equipment. And so the whole gaming has evolved so much over the years. So that little property that had, you know, that limited form of gaming then it expanded over the years. And then at some point, you know, because of our location, you know, we said, hey, we need a hotel. So we added 148 rooms around a pool. And then we were full all the time, right? And so we said, hey, I think we need another hotel. And in 2011, we added 152 rooms. So we got up to 300 rooms. And we were, every 5 years, there's a reset in the number of units that you're able to get. They don't go down, they go up. And so we were running out of space. I mean, we ideally in the casino world, you'd like to have about 4 feet chair back to create some elbow room. There was a lot of areas of our floor that were nowhere near chair back to chair, 4 feet chair back to chair back. So we were running out of room. The property was showing some age. You know, it was 20 plus years old. And we started having conversations with the council at the time. And we said, hey, you know, gaming is growing. We're full. Our hotel is full 365 days out of the year. We probably need to expand our hotel. We have some deferred maintenance issues that we need to deal with because the property's showing some age. And we probably need to add some new restaurants. We need to get into the group business, the entertainment business, if we want to be a player in this market. And so it took probably several years of conversations about, you know, because it's a big investment on the part of the community. I mean, you just don't make those decisions lightly. And so we started having those conversations, and I think it was probably late 2016, council, we do a quarterly presentation to the council about the business, and the chairman at the time said, when are you gonna show us those expansion plans? And we're like, well, I guess we can start talking about that. And he goes, what's the first step? Well, I said, we need to get an architectural drawing. We need to understand, you know, how do we master plan this thing? And so the council at the time approved us to move forward with the architectural work. And it just seemed like it just lit fire. I mean, we just started moving really quickly. And we broke ground late 2016, I think it was. It was the fourth quarter. And so we've been on this journey, mid 2019. So we've been into this construction journey for the last 2.5 years. And, you know, what we have now is a beautiful, brand new facility. I mean, from top to bottom, there's probably not a square inch of that facility that we didn't touch in some way, back of house, front of house. And so we have a brand new buffet, expanded seating. We have a brand new steakhouse, Chop Block and Brew. We have a wine bar, Oak and Fork, that has small plate offering. That's a new offering to the property. We expanded the seating to our quick serve restaurant. We expanded seating to our Dunkin' Donuts. We had very limited seating at the time. So we hit all of our restaurants. We expanded the gaming floor. We created that elbow room that's important. We created some height in the ceilings. There's some new decor that I think really sets the property apart. The one unique thing about the some of the architectural work that was done, council appointed a arts and design committee to work with the architect to bring in elements of the culture, the community culture, into the facility. So when you walk in the front door, you see this massive art piece that you might not know what it represents farming and the rich history of farming that the community has, but you just know it's something cool and it has lights and but the community knows the connection, right? They know the connection. If you go in and you go into the steakhouse, Chop Block and Brew, one of the things that I think is one of the coolest things in that restaurant is there's this huge picture. I don't know what you call it. Acrylic. Of two elder community members. I mean, it's the thing's bigger than life, and when you see that thing, if you don't have some glimpse of what the Auction Indian community is all about, you will when you see that picture. It's just a fascinating piece, and so those type elements are scattered throughout the property. They don't really take away from the excitement of the gaming, but you kind of get immersed in the rich history of the community. And our customers love it. They, you know, they're the walk from the parking garage, the new parking garage, over to the casino. You get to see the history of all the veterans that served the Ok-Chin community. So we have a lot of customers that are veterans. So they take great pride. I see customers just standing there, just staring at the pictures and just trying to, you know, just understand, you know, hey, this community had a big part of just about every major war that was ever fought. You know, and they take great pride, and I think that helps our business.
Well, I think that's so important because as an anthropologist, as a student of human history, removing some of the artificial compartments from knowledge and experience, compartments that have been imposed from Western ways of looking at the evolution of society and culture here, and really presencing the interrelationship between the past and the present, but also between these indigenous communities and the modern worlds that they're embedded in. I think that's critically important. And whether or not people realize, just as they may not realize that they're looking at an engine of economic development, they may not realize that that particular artwork is speaking to 5,000 years of agricultural history. But those signposts are there, and they're sounds like they're done in a very respectful and contemporary way. That creates a unique flavor. In other words, it doesn't diminish it and trivialize it by turning it into some sort of veneer of, you know, native authenticity or something, but really in partnership with the community creates a unique and local experience. Mike, let's bring you into the conversation because your job as director of marketing and operations is to somehow represent a lot of this to the outside world. Talk a little bit about your role and how you got involved with Harrah's Ok-Chin Casino.
I've been working at Harrah's Ok-Chin now for going on 14 years. And one of my favorite things to do when Robert's not in town, I get to speak to the new hires when they come in. And it's about a half-hour presentation that talks about our culture and what we're all about, just kind of, you know, on the way in the door. And one of the things I share with them, having been here that long, is there's real significance in working at Harrah's Ok-Chin Casino. So, you know, I've been offered opportunities with the company to go to other places around the country, and that would be significant for my family, good economic, you know, decisions, those sorts of things. But the significance you get working with the Ok-Chin community every day, you get to work with the people, you get to build those relationships. It's almost like family. And like Robert discussed and Chairman discussed, you get to see those investments they make into the community. So it's not, we just work for a casino. We're just, you know, we just make money off people gambling. It's, we get to see the Ok-Chin Indian community really, you know, prepare for the sustainability of their people for the next 100, 200 years or even longer with the moves they're making. So that's pretty exciting. It provides that significance in your job when you go to work every day that you're working for the folks around you.
How did you get started? What was your path that led you here?
So for me, I have an interesting story. My father was in the Air Force for 26 years, flew C-5. So I did 3 high schools in 3.5 years in Turkey, England, and Kansas. And Kansas is the most foreign country I've ever lived in. I graduated school, went on to KU, and then I transferred out to University of Arizona. I've been riding horses since I was small. I don't really ride horses anymore, but I started riding when I was about 10. I had an immigrant grandmother who came over who loved horses and told me, I was the first grandchild, you love horses, since I was 3 years old. So I just, you know, impressionable child, loved horses. So I started riding at 10, was pretty good at it, rode on the college equestrian team at University of Kansas. My father had transferred down to University of Arizona. My sister got a full ride to go to U of A for music theater. My mom decided to go back to school and follow her off to college. So we had 2 Wildcats going to school there. And I was in my junior year at Kansas. I was going to go to law school. Didn't want to go to law school. All my friends who were going hated it and didn't think that was the path for me anymore. Wasn't going to go join my father in the military. So I called him up right before Thanksgiving and said, Dad, I think when I got out of school here, I don't want to teach. I don't want to go in the military. I'm not feeling law school right now. I think I'm going to go to this school in Missouri and learn how to be a horse trainer. So my father, Lieutenant Colonel in the Air Force down there, he can sometimes be, you know, a little stern. He was somewhat quiet and said, we didn't spend all this money on college for you to go work on a farm. No, no offense, Chairman. I love farming and, you know, that sort of thing. But he said, to go work on a farm. And he said, talk to your mother. Handed the phone off. And my mother, being, you know, the enabler she is, she said, you know, they have this great program at the University of Arizona called the Racetrack Industry Program. When you're down for Christmas, I'll make you an appointment. You should check it out. So I came down over the Christmas break. I met with Wendy Davis, who's now the director there with the program. She's been there. It's been there since the 70s. It's run off an endowment from the horse racing industry. Bob Baffert, who won the two most recent Triple Crowns, one of the leading trainers in the country. Todd Pletcher, leading trainer in the country, all graduated from this program. So I thought it was a way to chase that passion and get a business degree and be able to do that. So it took me another 2.5 years to get through University of Arizona through the Racetrack Industry Program. Got a scholarship to go there. Was excited and had 11 interviews coming out of college, 3 job offers, Colonial Downs, Lone Star Park, and Santa Anita out in Southern California, and went to the home of Seabiscuit, Santa Anita. So worked there for about 9 years, and probably about 6 or 7 years in. It was a great job. I loved it. Got to see Silver Charm my first year there. It was Bob Baffert's first Kentucky Derby winning horse, almost won the Triple Crown, and really got to live out that sort of what I wanted to do when I grew up sort of thing. But looking around a little bit at the time, horse racing was a little bit, it was declining. It was the NASCAR of its day way back, in the early 1900s. I looked around and was looking at opportunities and actually got recruited down to Harrah's Resort, Southern California at Rincon to interview for an assistant director of marketing position. So Robert Livingston was actually there at the time. We didn't know each other. But the VP of marketing, Marty Goldman, brought me in, went through all the processes. I liked them. They liked me. They ended up hiring an internal candidate who I actually know very well now and works for our competition. He worked for us for quite a while. Didn't quite line up at the time, but there was something about this casino thing, and I really wanted to go work for a casino. So stayed with it, and about 9 months later, got offered the position to go, and I wanted to get back to Arizona. We have a lot of family here in Arizona. My wife was 8 months pregnant, started at Harrah's Auction, and away we go. So
now let's talk a little bit about marketing.
Sure.
Casinos and the different pathways and avenues that this plays out. Obviously, you've got event marketing. You speak a little bit to that, but also you've got relationship management, you know, cultivating a network of VIPs. You've got your, you know, now in the past 12 years, social media channels and things, which of course, you know, being regulated may or may not. I'm just curious to know, what does a casino marketer look at in the mix of things in a day-to-day?
Sure. So there's really two ways we compete. We've been talking about, you know, Caesars, formerly Harrah's, and what was Total Rewards. We rebranded it this year to Caesars Rewards, our loyalty program. And there's two things that bring our customers, the majority of our customers here in the Phoenix or Arizona area, out to see us. And that's our customer service, so our great employees and the great service they provide, and Caesars Rewards. So in Caesars Rewards is really that tangible thing, that card in your wallet, where I can go down there, and if I'm going to play, I might as well be earning something for it and be able to go use it in Southern California, Las Vegas, Atlantic City, and all over the country. So we have customers who drive past 2, if not 3 of our competitors to come down and see us. And we know our guests are promiscuous, and there's something called luck. So if they're feeling unlucky, they may go play other places. But we have long-lasting relationships with our guests. So.
It's fascinating to me, again, as a social scientist and a human, curious human, that the psychology of gaming and the psychology of branding intersect in a casino. You know, you're nurturing the brand and also connecting people to experiences that have emotional dimensions to them, and you're providing an opportunity for them to play and, you know, to win and lose and participate in a meaningful experience. How important is the overall brand in the mix?
It's very important. When people ask me what I do for a living, I get to say, you know, I play games for a living, right? We go out there, we're playing games. And part of that's our great customer service. We have day one employees, about 15 of them still after 25 years. So 15 people have been with us for 25 years that work in places like our slot floor, the buffet, that our customers know and have built relationships with, casino hosts that take care of these customers. So, and we have many, many customers who still tell stories about that first opening day, driving down the 347 with traffic backed up for hours. I've heard it hundreds of times. And they're like, I remember what it was like then. They're emotionally invested, and they're part of the family for being out there. But the brand, I think, is very important, and people understand the benefits they're getting. We do provide tangible benefits back to the guests. So Robert talked about reward credits that's based on your play. But, you know, on average, looking at everything from your weekly offers to events and promotions, the reward credits, free hotel room nights, you know, free meals you may offer, you know, we give back or reinvest, you know, upwards of 40% back into to the customers. So they feel that. They understand I get something of real value for my play at Herzog Chin that I may not get when I play at other places.
Now, you mentioned something really important that I want to underline. When you were talking about the experience and when you were talking about marketing, you started by talking about customer service. And I think that points to a culture, both at the leadership level, but also on the floor and in the service areas where people are interacting with customers, an awareness that they are representing the brand. And that talk that you are giving folks as they're coming in is bringing them into a story that they get to actually write every day. How important is nurturing those the human capacities and the people who work at Herzog Chin in the marketing mix? I mean, you obviously don't see them as separate.
No, it's, I mean, it's everything. We aren't anything without our people. So, and we measure our service every single week. We've got our service scores by every single area. We understand it. We have competitions company-wide, and I'm very proud to say that we're in the top five consistently. A lot of times in the top three. We have our table games department is usually number one in the entire company for their friendly, helpful service scores for our guests. We really, really have fantastic people that work for us that provide great service. Look, when you go gambling, nobody likes to be parted from their money, and everybody understands that could be a piece of it. It's entertainment. It's fun. I can win money. I can't win money if I go to the movies, but I can go play $20-$40 in the slot machine. Might be able to leave with more money than I came with. But in those, we have a lot more instances. On average, a guest when they come and see us from valet or the parking garage to when they leave, they might have 20 interactions with the different areas of our business. It only takes one bad interaction for them to have a negative feeling or response when they leave. So, you know, we talk about that a lot with our teams, and everybody plays a part. Everyone greets everyone. We say hello to everybody. And we hear it not only from people outside of our business, but even people inside of our business. When we have our corporate partners come visit us, they will routinely tell us almost every single time, wow, you have a really, really friendly team. And I think, and everyone says hello and everybody's very helpful. And I think that is a lot to do with just our DNA. So the leadership, but also the Akchin Indian community, what they stand for, what they bring to the table. We have a lot of Akchin Indian community members who work for us. We have a HDS development program, Harris Development Systems, where we take Akchin Indian community members and run them through every aspect of the business to try to develop future leaders of the business. So really, it's just part of who we are. Our director of human resources, Beth Amoroso, is a huge advocate of people and service, and it really shines throughout the business.
Customer loyalty and retention is obviously a huge part of the model. How do you attract new customers to the property?
Attracting new customers, it can sometimes be a bit of a challenge. We used to do all of the classic things with, you know, sign up for a card and get sort of things. But right now, we recently came out of this expansion with some brand new advertising, Play for All, new campaign. We worked with an advertising agency out of Southern California, who's also working with our Harrah's Resort Southern California property to understand, you know, who we are and who we wanted to be, and then went out with something that looked very, very different. It's animation. It's a lot more digital, a lot more things or things on television that look very different than our competitors. Early in the process with them, they came in and they did a market drive, looked at all of our competitors' advertising, put it all up on a wall, sat the executive team there and said, this is all the casinos in the marketplace. And honestly, I couldn't tell which ads were ours. I mean, our competitors use the same colors we use.
You're talking about television ads.
This is everything. This is print everything advertising, this is billboards, this is online, digital, this is TV. Everything starts to look the same, like in classic casino. So we made a very concerted effort to go out and do something very, very differently. When the expansion was complete, we've had a dozen different people. Our beverage manager was walking across the floor. This was the first week after our new TV spot ran. And saw a couple customers walking around. They're kind of looking up at the ceiling, looking around. And they looked like this was perhaps the first time where they were there. So Nate approached them and said, hi, how are you doing? I'm Nate Kinslinger, the beverage manager here. How can I help you? Looks like maybe you haven't been here before. They said, and I quote, we just saw your TV ad. The place looked like it was fun and we wanted to come check it out. I've been doing this for over 20 years. I don't know that I've ever heard somebody say, I saw your TV ad. The place looked like a fun place and I wanted to come check it out. And we've heard that dozens of times from people. So the advertising agency really did a good job of doing that and getting customers to come out and see the new sort of reinvented Harazakchen. We do all the classic things online with, you know, list generating and trying to target and speak to the right folks.
What piece of the pie, how big is the digital piece?
It's getting bigger. It wasn't very big even 5 or 6 years ago, but as we've been able to get better at targeting with, you know, tools like Facebook and such on digital, we're getting more and more. And it's stealing share from, you know, traditional print. We aren't big players in print advertising anymore. We like our outdoor advertising because of our location and how that directs people in, but we're directing more and more. And even our television advertising, we're making it in a way now so it's all completely convertible to online and digital platforms. We're doing more with things like Hulu and YouTube and things like that as well.
So, longer form?
Yes, both. Yeah, both commercials and longer form. We've done some great, we've gamified ads to where we can take our Play for All ads. And then on that attraction piece, it's play this little game that looks just like our advertising. You play along, whether it's a word game or a number game or some sort of digitized game, and then you can win some sort of a coupon, or like whether it's a buffet coupon, or come sign up free slot play to come out and see us.
On the entertainment side, what's coming up? Who's on the slate for the coming months? I know that this is a big part of how you draw, you know, new and experienced people to the properties. What's the lineup? What can we see at the event center?
It's pretty exciting. You know, we just opened up this new multi-use space for group events and for entertainment. We can seat a little over 2,000 people. We started out with some in-brand entertainment with Penn & Teller, who performs at the Rio up Caesars property in Las Vegas. The Righteous Brothers, our grand opening weekend, we had two nights of Dave Chappelle in the marketplace, which was fantastic. Sold out both nights. We recently just had Dwight Yoakam a week and a half ago, sold out shows. This weekend for Memorial Day, we have Eddie Money and Starship featuring Mickey Thomas coming up. That's Sunday. Doors open at 6 p.m. Tickets are still available. Los Lonely Boys and Ozo Motley on June 8th. June 15th, Creedence Clearwater Revisited. That's a fan favorite. The Mavericks and Los Lobos. August 30th, going back to the 90s. Some people will enjoy this one. Belle Biv DeVoe coming. So I haven't seen them in the marketplace in a while.
They haven't been in the marketplace in a while.
That's right, yeah. So September 6th, we have Great White and Slaughter going to the 80s hair metal stuff. And then September 28th, Josh
also
Turner.
90s, though.
I'm sorry,
also,
90s. Yeah,
also
in the 90s as well, right?
Yeah.
So, and then Josh Turner, so September 28th. Then we have more that we're trying to book, and we're really trying to get all sorts of genres and everything in. We're not sure exactly. Country always does very well for us, but we'd like to represent everybody and all sorts of different tastes and get people to come down and see us.
I'm fascinated by the fact that much of the music industry that is making its revival is doing it at casino-affiliated events centers. In other words, the era of arenas is, as the music industry changes, but entertainment still remains important. What are some of the trends there with some of these acts making comebacks or working this network, performers, et cetera, on the music side? How would you characterize that trend?
I think it's just the demographics of our customers. And you look at, you know, our core customer, and we got a lot of retired folks here, got a lot of baby boomers, and you look at, you know, what are they going to be excited about, right? So we try to offer those acts. Mike kind of read through the list. But then, you know, there's some other acts that, you know, we had Dave Chappelle. I mean, you know, most of our baby boomers probably don't get too fired up about Dave Chappelle, but it gives us an opportunity to introduce a new set of customers into our property. And so that gets back to the loyalty program, and just it's a way for us to populate that loyalty program with some new customers.
And as the music industry has changed since the 80s and 90s, it seems like smaller, more nimble event centers have continued to provide an outlet for fan favorites. And now if you want to see, you know, some of the biggest names, you're going to a casino affiliated events center.
Yeah. And everybody's a VIP, right?
Yes.
Because you're so close to the stage.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about some of these venues that you go to, And you have to look at the big giant screen because the entertainer looks like you can barely make out the entertainer on the stage. But even if you're in the very back of this venue that seats 2,000, you got a great seat, and you feel like you're in a VIP level seat, even though, you might be on the back row of the venue.
You know, it's fun for someone. I mean, I'm 45, and it's kind of a return of not quite a club feel because this is a larger venue, but it still does have the intimacy of a smaller venue. You know, I remember coming to Phoenix in 1991 to see Van Halen and playing at the big arena, right? And that was a totally different thing than a year or two ago when I went to see Sammy Hagar and the Circle playing at a competitor, in Southern California, in Indio. So, but it was, I liked it as much, if not more, as someone who loves the music, who loves the artists. It's just a neat environment, a very accessible, none of the nonsense that I remember from high school and college about going to huge, concerts and things. So it's an interesting evolution. Chairman Robert Miguel, as we wrap up our conversation, obviously the Akchin Indian community sits at this intersection between tradition, modernity, between rural and urban. You're located in many ways. For you as a man, as a member of the community, as a leader in the tribal government, what are you excited about as you look at some of the younger folks coming up and what's happened in the last 10, 15, 20 years? What leave us here with your perspective on what the future holds for Akchin and the surrounding environment?
Very exciting. Very, very exciting. Again, we've continued to grow. And just as, our tribe, when I was young, they had to move and accept the growth and what was coming about at that time. Video games probably barely began. Elders didn't understand it, but they understood that this was the way of life now. But we still try to intertwine the culture and tradition from the past. So at this present time, I mean, you go to the new generation, it's totally different. But we want to be able to still accept that, definitely. I mean, because that's their way of life now. So, but to be able to, again, continue, I think the more we move, the more things change. As long as we implement and we recognize our tradition, culture, I mean, everything's going to fall into place and everything's going to be great. But I just want to add that, really quick that, our relationship with Harris is wonderful. I mean, I don't think we would be in the position we're in today without our relationship with Harris. They've done a great job. You know, it was mentioned earlier from Mike Kittner that, we have an HDS program which allows our young community members to possibly get into the market with Harris. A number of these young community members, I'll tell you right now, they probably never ever had a voice when they were young. They were in clothes and just not really public figures or whatnot. But through the program, I've heard them like speak like never before, and they're really, really, wow. This is, look what Harris has did for our younger generation as far as bringing out their voice and just being people person. So we're excited about that. And again, the relationship just continues to grow. And, not to say anything about other casinos, but I personally feel, and I always tell my constituents, other tribal leaders, we have the best community, Native American community in Arizona, and our facility is better than yours, which I'm sure they'll say otherwise too. But again, it's just a friendly thing we say to each other, but we're all proud of each other and what we've done. But, our future looks great. I mean, we're laying down the foundation, just like our former leaders, they laying down the foundation of what we've become today. And we're laying the foundation to our younger ones of what we're going to be coming in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
Well, I want to thank the three of you for coming in. Michael Kintner, Director of Marketing and Operations at Harris Akchin, Robert Livingston, General Manager of Harris Akchin, and Chairman Robert Miguel, Tribal Leader at the Akchin Indian Community. Thank you so much for joining us here in the studio today.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thanks, Adrian.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.